Meet Jeff, champion of the neighbourhood. Whilst all around him snooze, Jeff's shutters roll up. Your morning paper doesn't slide silently through your letterbox by itself. No, 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 no. It takes skill, care, and an alarm clock set to 4:15 a.m. And as long as it is, he knows McDonald's are there with a big cup of coffee and a keep up the good work, Jeff. With over 600 restaurants open 24 hours, if you're awake, we're awake.
Blog Talk Radio.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the FDH Lounge. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris. We have a very special conversation coming up for you today, a review of the Republican and National Political Conventions with Colin Delaney, proprietor of ePolitics.com. We've had him on many times to talk politics in the past, including this election cycle. He will be joining us momentarily to get into all that has happened in this crazy last half month of political activity. And so many weird and wild things that happened during the Republican National Convention that week in my hometown of Cleveland, the subsequent week in Philadelphia with the Democratic National Convention, and in the couple of days since. We are going to endeavor to do justice to as much as we can of this entirety of the time period, a crazy half month in American politics. I see that we have our guest on the phone line. So, just to reset, welcome everyone to FDH Lounge mini episode number 740. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris. We have with us today a very special guest we've had on a number of times in this election cycle and in the past couple of years, breaking down politics with us, Colin Delaney, proprietor of ePolitics. So as per usual, you have a perspective from the left of center with Colin, from the paleo right, not to say alt-right, with myself. We're going to get into everything that happened as much as we can anyway. So many different developments coming out of the Republican National Convention in my hometown of Cleveland, the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia, and the crazy couple of days since. I know that Colin is full of takes, as you can always find at ePolitics on Twitter, as well as ePolitics.com. Let's bring him in to start breaking it down. So much to get to, my man. Colin, how you doing trying to keep up with everything that's happening in this weirdest and wildest of election cycles, brother?
I tell you what, my friend, this is not a normal year, right? This is every day it is a new story.
You know, and I was thinking about this in preparation for this segment because I was thinking that a lot of times on this show, politics is the most natural extension of how the show started in the first place. When we spun off the FDH Lounge from FantasyDraftHelp.com and wanted to take our approach to analyzing sports and specifically with that fantasy sports and try and apply that across the spectrum, politics lends itself so neatly to that. You get into the X's and O's and the kind of stuff that I love, historical precedent, and we're going to talk about this a decent amount because we're going to have to refer to that somehow, and I suppose that'll be a good matter of looking at things anyways, what applies from the past and what doesn't apply. But the normal way of looking at this, I know when we were looking at things in the 2012 election cycle, other different times, there were things that we could call upon, much as we would do in sports analysis, and say, well, based on having seen this, we can forecast that this might happen. But you're right, this time that seems way more out the window than usual.
Yeah, I mean, the pollsters are having a hard time this year. It's hard to understand who is a likely voter. You know, are there white working class voters in battleground states in the Midwest that might have, you know, that might turn out for Trump, who, even if they didn't like the Democrats before, you know, wouldn't necessarily come out and vote against him. They might have just stayed home. The Bernie supporters seem to be coming home pretty quickly. You know, the Bernie or bust people at the convention, Democratic convention, honestly don't seem very representative of the broader population of Bernie supporters. But that's another wrinkle that goes into it. You know, so I think many things have been upended this year, you know, in addition to the careers of many very respected Republican officials.
Well, absolutely, and we're going to get to whether or not one of them might have taken a permanent walk off the plank, as I am hoping will be the case. But first, what I want to look at, just generally speaking, when you talk about unlikelihoods for this year, and this has been a weird year, a lot of people have compared it to 1968 in terms mm-hmm. of instability, in terms of things happening. And again, 1968 was not just confined to the United States. When you start thinking about the Soviet invasion of Czechoslovakia at the time.
Absolutely.
You look at the totality of that year and the Tet Offensive and the things that were happening globally. So 2016 globally is a year of tremendous instability. So people were looking ahead at these conventions and thinking, uh-oh. And I'll tell you what, man, I will say this. In Cleveland, it was just a sense of dread in the weeks leading up to it. Like, oh, God, be careful what you wish for. But I got to take my hat off. My cousin, Eddie Tomba, I am proud of him greatly. He is the police commander who was in charge of all the preparations for this thing. The chief had delegated everything to him, and I just thought, oh, God, poor Eddie. Something's going to happen out of his control. He's going to get thrown under the bus. His career is going to be over. Instead, they come out of it looking like heroes. I am just very, very thrilled. But one of the unlikelihoods, I think, when you look at it, both cities won, right? Because in a year like this, you avoid anything bad and you win. You don't have chaos and bloodshed in the streets, no bombings, you win. But just if you go a little bit further, I got to say, at the risk of being a homer for Cleveland, everything I was hearing from the national media that was at both places, politicos that were at both places, you look at the logistics of it, part of it is Philly's a bigger city. Geographically, it's more spread out. But when you talk about cramped quarters in the arena, right down to the concession lines, Cleveland seemed to be winning every check mark that I could see. Were you hearing a lot of the same things?
Well, I mean, you guys have got a lot to make up for with the Browns and all, so we won't worry about that too much. But,
not the Cavs, buddy. Not the Cavs.
You know, win here and there. You know, good for the town. No, I really did hear a good thing. Partly, of course, you know, not nearly as many people turned out to protest in Cleveland as was expected. In part, I think, out of that fear of violence, Clevelanders weren't the only ones feeling a sense of dread at what could happen. You know, nobody wants something horrible, you know, to go on. Around, in the Democratic Convention, there was definitely more action in the streets, but, you know, it was kind of interesting, you know, I've read this in a couple of places, or a couple of people have said this, that, you know, in Cleveland, the chaos was inside, the convention hall.
Yes.
It was peaceful outside. In Philadelphia, it was a little chaotic outside, but ran like a clock inside.
Well,
except
yeah,
for that handful of, except for those, 40 or 50 Bernie people.
Well, and aside from day one, and I want to take this chronologically as much as possible, so we'll start with Cleveland. Mm-hmm. I will say this, though, for everybody that was making fun of Scott Baio speaking at the Republican National Convention, and to whatever degree I get it, at least people took it for what it was. Sarah Silverman gets up there at the Democratic National Convention with her ONG plea for unity, and people are acting like she's the greatest font of wisdom of all time instead of somebody who can tell a good fart joke here and there. You know what I mean? So,
I will say to Sarah, though, she illustrated that a comedian can say things that a public official can't. I thought I was way on board with her telling them the Bernie people they were just being ridiculous. Scott Baio, God bless him. You know, I know he had a career once.
Well, I basically like the guy from what I know of him, so I'm not going to be too hard on him. But, I mean, I get it from what the stuff that I'd heard and the people that were laughing about it, but it did seem to be different prisms that people were looking at things through. Now, we hinted at this before. I want to talk Ted Cruz, because it was a week that started on day one. His people got gaveled down in something that I think the Politburo, quite frankly, would have been laughing at as far as that vote on the floor that they called for. And it doesn't matter how loud the A's and nays would have been. The chair was going to go a certain way, and he did. And Paul Ryan was smart enough to make sure he wasn't the chair at that point. But from that.
Good move, right?
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah, it saved him what could have been worse wrath from Donald Trump, I suppose. But you go to day three during the daytime. Cruz is gathering up his people outside, giving a rally. I could see from the TV that it was down by the Rock Hall. And he gets buzzed by the Trump plane as he's speaking. And there was some kind of joking back and forth about that. But everything I got ahead of time from the body language was that Ted Cruz was not going to give at the very least, a full-throated endorsement of Donald Trump. It would be lukewarm at best. But anyways, the Trump people knew that it was going to be a no-endorsement deal. They set up basically the trap to have everybody screaming and booing, and as it happened. And it, Ted Cruz, again, makes a career out of grandstanding. And I think in this one, miscalculated greatly, because I don't see how you come back from this. I know in his mind, he comes back the conquering hero 4 years, 8 years from now, whatever. But you look at Nelson Rockefeller in 64. You look at the people. Ted Kennedy probably wasn't going to run again after 1980 regardless, but he would have had no chance after basically putting the shank in Jimmy Carter during the convention anyways. The people who've been the most divisive in this moment have never gone on to become president or even, well, in the case of Rockefeller, vice president, but you look at that, he had to beg off in 76 and not run again. So do you agree, as I do, that Ted Cruz faces extraordinarily long odds to keep his shameful career going?
Tell me how you really feel about old Ted there, Rick. Yeah, I have to say that was an absolutely amazing moment. You know, Ted's reputation is that he puts himself ahead of everything, including principle. And, you know, here we're using him hiding behind principle. So, yeah, exactly. Try to put a shiv into Trump. You know, so I think my guess is that what he's calculating, one, I don't think he expected to be booed off the stage. But if Trump does lose, then, you know, other times when more moderate Republicans have been beaten recently, the line keeps coming around that Republicans are nominating insufficiently conservative candidates. And I think Cruz is setting himself up for that. So his success or failure will depend in part on whether mainstream Republicans buy that narrative, that the reason they keep losing is that, for instance, Trump, you know, is to the left of Hillary Clinton on some issues, basically, or at least certainly to the left of 2012 Hillary Clinton or 2008 Hillary Clinton. You know, I do think that Cruz's personal, what's a good word, odiousness is going to forever limit him. Democrats would love to run against him for president, I'll tell you that.
Oh, absolutely. Why wouldn't you guys? Because, again, with all of the deficiencies that he has going for him, I look at him, and, again, he's always about the calculation. To me, I think it's just a thing of where he's gotten away with things so many different times. I think he got overconfident. I think he got way cocky because he was not even really going out of his way to deny that this is the first speech of the 2020 race in his mind. He was not doing it. Normally, under those circumstances, a politician's like, let's focus on this election cycle, let's whatever. He was just putting it out there. And again, at the risk of ever taking up in any way for Donald Trump, it's kind of one of those things of like, you can't let that go. You can't let that go when somebody's just openly going to get up there and put the shiv in you. And I saw some of my never Trump friends on Facebook reacting with outrage at the trap that Trump had set for him. I'm sitting there going, do you not realize that Cruz had it coming? I mean, I think it was blatantly obvious to everybody that wasn't biased one way or another, wasn't it?
Well, if it was a trap for Cruz, it also trapped Trump. I mean, it doesn't help him to have one of his, to basically have one of the leading voices in the Republican Party say, well, you don't have to vote for him. And also to have a convention that's supposed to be a coming together to have that kind of moment. I mean, I saw poll data a few days after the Republican convention that more people rated the convention as disastrous than rated it favorable for the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but the weird thing is,
it's like a murder suicide.
See, but here's the weird thing, though. It looked like, now again, and then Trump obviously, again, as he always does, Friday takes it too far, getting up there and bringing up the Lee Harvey Oswald stuff again and whatever. But Trump, I thought, had succeeded in making Cruz the bad guy here and was unifying the party at Ted Cruz's expense. That's what I was seeing. And it's one of these things where, you know, you look at 2020 and you look ahead. I have to say, I have a sneaking suspicion at this point that Doug Stafford and all the smart guys that were around Rand Paul, I thought they really, really biffed it at the time, getting out as early as they did. And I look at it now, and I'm looking at how many careers are in ruins, whether it be Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio on a national scale, whatever. Yeah. Like, let's just slink off the scene of the crime as quick as we can. This year is toast anyways. There's nothing that can be done. The people that are around the longest are going to be the ones that are going to be remembered the worst. Do you think there might be anything to that theory whatsoever? Like, let's just get out of the way, hope people forget we were ever a part of this, and we come back fresh?
Well, you know, I honestly had not thought of it that way. You know, obviously Marco was trying to save his skin. Cruz was trying to position himself for the future. But someone like Rand Paul, that is very interesting. I mean, you know, early results aren't favorable. Trump is looking like this crazy wild card. So why not cut your losses and plan for the future? And also, you know, Rand Paul has a Senate race, and now Marco has a Senate race too. And neither of them is guaranteed to win those. So they need to go home and they need to go home and get to work if they want to have a job next year. So I think it's very interesting. But looking ahead to 2020, I mean, the name that pops to my mind, you know, assuming Hillary wins, is, say, Nikki Haley.
Could be. And you heard it here first. I'm going to go out on a big, big, big limb. I'm not necessarily sure Rand wants to do it again. He wants to see the brand represented. If he decides he doesn't want to do it and Justin Amash is interested in stepping up, I like Thomas Massey as well as him, but Massey doesn't seem like he'd ever be likely to pull the trigger. But if it was Amash instead of Rand Paul, it wouldn't shock me. You heard it here first. But
well,
you look at what came out.
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. That would be an interesting twist to it, wouldn't it? Putting a guy with his pedigree in there.
I don't know. I think there is a moment coming for Republicans. I felt a little bit like this toward about the UK with Brexit. That there is a time for new people to come out here, right? And I think of Nikki Haley one because she, you know, has ethically a pretty clean reputation. You know, South Carolina doesn't help Republicans. You know, they would get that anyway. But she's a fresh face. She's a woman. She's, you know, not – her ancestry is not Northern European. It's a chance to kind of get a new air into things. But I'd also be looking at younger ones that we haven't really thought about yet. You know, there are a lot of younger Republicans who believe climate change is happening, you know. There are a lot of younger Republicans who have gay friends, that a lot of these issues that are politicians have been using in a polarizing way aren't working with their own youth the way that they worked with their parents. So I'm waiting for a new generation. I think the Republican Party needs a reset. I mean, we need a healthy conservative party in this country. But what we're seeing now is with Trump is just madness.
Well, and I want to get to that point as we get to sort of the tail end of the Democratic convention. Mm. But with starting chronologically with the convention, we alluded to this. It starts with first day chaos. It starts with the Bernie people booing a lot of stuff here. And again, a lot of that comes out of WikiLeaks showing just heavy and fat the thumb of the DNC was on the scale. For Hillary Clinton, which, again, we knew all along was the case, and trying to bury the debates at, like, 3 a.m. on a Sunday morning and all this kind of stuff
so
they were doing.
Stupid.
Yeah,
this
just
stupid.
Put it.
You know,
yeah, this,
and
this,
the thing
this
is, put, I, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, this just put it right out there. React to what was put out there and how it affected the start of the convention, my friend.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, for one thing, it is if the Russians are behind this in any way, you know, not necessarily the timing of the leak, but, you know, there are, you know, fingerprints on the data itself. It is something we've never quite seen before in politics, right? And it really needs to raise some serious questions. And I'm quite happy that heads are rolling at the party right now, honestly. From a digital point of view, you know, I do, you know, my focus is the internet side. There was a lot that, you know, a lot of younger folks in the party wanted to do that just wasn't getting emphasized, so we were missing some real opportunities. I'm sad for, you know, Debbie and her family, but it was time for the go. And then the emails that went back and forth, it was, you know, you have to assume the Democratic Party is an efficient entity if you think that their attempt to put their thumb on the scale mattered a whole lot, right? Bernie raised all the money he needed, more than he needed. He had all of the enthusiastic followers he needed. He just couldn't get the ones who weren't that enthusiastic, right?
And now what I've heard is that, you know, while the Bernie people were booing the kind of the floor monitors out there, when Hillary people were trying to shout them down, they were quieting. The staff was quieting the Hillary people. I think there was this sense that they wanted the Bernie people to get it out of their system. And most of them did, you know? But no, well, that email thing did not help one bit.
Well, yeah. And, you know, it's clear because, again, I remember back to the opening day or so of the convention, what the stories were, is that the old man lost control of his followers. But that's one of these things here, too. And, you know, for all the people like me who are sitting here on the outside kind of smirking, and one of my good friends and show contributors, Kyle Ross, is a Sanders guy, so I'm kind of smirking about all the sellout stuff here. But, you know, that just shows the challenge of the situation, because when you've been going for a whole year on crooked system, we need a revolution, and then at the end it's like, okay, please rally behind Mom Nixon pantsuit here, you know what I mean? How do you reconcile the two? You're going to have people that you riled up so much that you just lose control of.
I think you're right on there. And, you know, a lot of us on the left were unhappy with Bernie, you know, going on and on about the system being rigged. And you can talk about the financial system being rigged. But, you know, the Bernie won a majority of caucuses, and caucuses are the least democratic part of the, you know, the primary process, right? They're the ones that a small number of people can skew. So there was a lot of purer-than-thou bull, if you ask me, from the Bernie side. And I think Bernie himself was being irresponsible by continuing to push this, you know, the election was fixed kind of narrative. And now we see Trump taking it up. You know, I'm very afraid that if Trump loses, he's going to tell his supporters again and again that the election was stolen from them by the other. And in his mind, the other is brown people. And I'm afraid of what will come from that.
Well, here's the thing, though, and I have some thoughts on that. I want to circle back to the convention, because for a moment here we're getting out of chronological order.
Oh, yeah.
But
right.
That's a point I wanted to talk about. So we'll make a point. We'll stick a tack in that. We'll circle back around to it.
Yeah.
Because I had a note here that I wanted to talk about this, because that part of it, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the Democrats in 2000 came a little bit close to tiptoeing to the edge of delegitimizing an outcome, but you're right. This is further than we've seen before. However, we've also not seen a sitting president outright say that one of his potential successors is unfit for office, whatever. How do you have any kind of a transition if Trump wins? So as far as I'm concerned, this is on both sides. We are seeing things, to me, on both sides where we are being pushed to irresponsible points here, because the outcome needs to be respected whether Trump wins or Trump loses. And Trump is setting it up that if he loses, that it was stolen from him. And the Democrats are setting it up ahead of time that if Trump wins, then we have a madman that nobody is supposed to respect for the next 4 years. So there's lines being crossed everywhere as far as I can see.
I don't mean to be blunt. Trump is a madman. That's not
political
messaging. He's insane.
But should the President of the United States say that?
Yes.
The dignity of the office is what I'm looking at. Really?
Well,
okay.
I don't see Trump having any dignity in the office. You want to talk about something that's going to hurt the dignity of the office? Put Trump in it. You know? A man who leers at his own daughter, for God's sake.
I don't disagree with any of that. I just don't like a president.
I see him as a danger. I see him as a fundamental danger to democracy, because he has the feel of a man who wants to be king, a Putin, you know, a Mugabe, a Mussolini.
I don't disagree with any of that, but I mean, as far as how this country deals with it, I suppose is where I would differ as well. What I want to ask you also too, while we're on this point, before we circle back around, because I want to get to something that you wrote about this, generally speaking, on e-politics, when you were making the point that Sanders was making of, hey, vote for Mama Pantsuit Nixon. It's important. We have to do this.
you know, there was a column, and I don't remember who, whether it was Rich Lowry or Jonah Goldberg, they're like the same neocon chicken hawk in my mind, so I can't remember which one it was, and I'm not sure it matters. But they made the point.
One's a better writer, though. Yeah, Goldberg's a good writer.
Yeah. Neither one of them is that great. Both of them are hacks. But they actually made a point that I found very interesting about this, which is, as far as the whole thing of trying to warn people against Trump, to a certain extent, this is the same kind of rhetoric that we get every 4 years. So I look at it in terms of, you're saying it's too important, Trump is such a grave danger, whatever. And I think back to the Henry Kissinger line that I uh-huh. love to use, and I try to use it in his voice. It has the added benefit of being true. So you're saying something about somebody who is actually unbalanced and all of these things. But, Colin, can you actually tell me that if Jeb Bush was the nominee or Rand Paul or whoever, it wouldn't be, OMG, wolf in sheep's clothing, it's too important, it's too important. Mm-hmm. I mean, to a certain extent, as I see it, Trump's just making it easy for guys like you to say what you'd be saying about any of them. He's just handing you the knife and holding out his throat. Am I wrong about that?
Well, I'll say it's a different – I see what you're getting at. I definitely see where you're going with that. If you look back at how the Democrats attacked Mitt Romney, it was, the out-of-touch thing. But it really boiled down to policy, right, that Trump would – I mean, Romney would allow a Republican Congress member to Congress to slash the social safety net, get rid of, taxes for millionaires, all the above. Those are legislative things. If Bush were running, sure, there'd be some dirty tricks here and there. Of course, it's politics. People are going to say nasty things. But I think that they would be attacking him much more substantively. Trump is a unique danger within our political system. I think there's a unique urgency. But I'll tell you, I do advocacy in politics, and our whole job is to create a sense of urgency. So you have to, like, for instance, when I worked at a women's organization, if the Republican Congress got its way, women's right to choose their own health care would go away in a lot of places. And that is a real danger in the minds of a lot of women. And you aren't crying wolf when you're saying, if these guys had the power, this is what they would do. These are the judges they would nominate, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's real.
Well, if I
that's what we'd be doing regardless.
Okay, if you mean by attacking substantively, if by that you mean demagoguing policy positions, then I agree with you 100%.
Yeah,
the chances are that's
not. Absolutely, I'll definitely call it that. Without a doubt. But you're going up against a guy who darkly suggests that Scalia was murdered. Suggests that Cruz's dad killed Kennedy, has been going on and on about how Barack Obama he's going on InfoWar, he's going on, I forget the guy's name, so the guy who runs InfoWar.
Alex Jones.
He's going on all these
Alex Jones,
things.
Yeah,
Alex Jones, thank you. And he's alluding to these ideas that Obama is somehow an alien enemy other, right? There were a few people, I've gotten some emails from conservatives and liberals that were going after Romney on the Mormon thing, that Mormons are saying Mormons aren't Christians or something like that. But that was a fringe view. There are plenty of people that have been fired up to believe that Obama is a Manchurian candidate who is secretly working to destroy America from within. That's not normal.
Well, there have been a lot of things not normal about this election cycle and the way that things have been progressing here. One of the richest veins to mine here, when you want to look at things historically and when you want to give that sort of sports statistics type attention to something, is the pendulum swings in this country, specifically when we have two-term presidents. So circling back to the Democratic convention, as the week goes on, the Democrats see, after the emergency of day one with the uprising on the floor, the imperative for unity, unity, unity. So by the end of the week, they come out of it with exactly, I think, the picture of unity they're looking for. But this is what I want to ask you about, and that is at what cost? Because when you look at two-term presidencies, obviously the gold standard for success in passing the baton to the next guy is 1988, because 99.9% of that was Reagan. The remaining part was George H.W. Bush's personal magnetism getting himself elected. But
You had a similar landscape.
Other than Willie Horton, they ran a good campaign.
They were very solid all the way around, but peace and prosperity, those are the two big things here. Mm-hmm. So you look at 1960 and 2000, which to me are the closest parallels to 1988. Those are things where, again, the Democratic candidate in 2000, Al Gore, and Richard Nixon in 1960 both kind of resisted the urge to run as a third term. Both had reasons of pride and calculation and meshed in that. Had they run openly as a third term, as George H.W. Bush did, they probably would have won because it was that close and it probably could have swung it their way. So you look at that. You look at the times when you're sprinting away as much as you can. 1968, 2008, ironically only 8 years after the other two examples I cited there. Great examples of disunity in the party, disunity in the country, cataclysms going on, whatever. In my mind, 2016, I don't put it with those 2 years yet, but we're closer to that than we are 1960, 1988, or 2000. Hillary getting up there, gratuitously embracing Obama. She didn't have to be on the floor for that point in time. She didn't have to be there. It was kind of a surprise. Openly kind of running as the third term at a time when the right track, wrong track numbers are so grotesquely underwater. I'm looking
Obama's
at this going,
Obama's
yeah,
numbers
I just,
are positive.
Yeah, but you know what? Listen, so are Reagan's, even when people didn't like his policies. You know what I mean? I mean, some presidents have that. So that's what I'm looking at. She's looking just at Obama's popularity numbers, but I'm looking at this going, I think she's making a mistake by allowing Trump to put the third term thing on her.
Well, I think you may well be right in, and a lot of Democrats were thinking that a year ago, right? That there was going to be a tough hill to climb. You know, if you go back to I will point out that in 2000, Al Gore won the popular vote, including in Florida. It's just they weren't allowed to be counted there.
He wouldn't have won in the House of Representatives anyways, though. He wouldn't have won in the House,
That was another day. A lot of you know, Democratic political people were quite worried. You know, Obama won 8 years ago by a little under 8 points. It had dropped to a little under 4 points last time. There is a certain exhaustion that starts to set in. People want fresh faces. And, you know, I've always cautioned, you know, there are a lot of people in this country who are legitimately suffering. I was just back in my hometown, Palestine, Texas, recently. And the middle-class jobs are, except for healthcare, are mostly gone. It's working at Walmart or Lowe's or the prison or the chicken factory. And the prospects that were once there in places like that town is Trump territory, without a doubt. The Democrat will get a slightly more votes than the percentage of minority voters in the county. With almost all of the white voters will go for Trump. And again, Democrats make a terrible mistake, both from a political and from a human point of view, when they minimize or dismiss all of that, right? And so I think that, yeah, this year could have been really close. But when you've got a president who is still, you know, widely respected in this country, approval rating above 50%, and, you know, almost a legendarily kind of steady person, I think it makes all the sense in the world for Hillary to wrap herself around him.
Well, see, that's very interesting because – as I see it, she's got a tougher slog than I would have thought several weeks ago because I was convinced she was going to win when it came down to her and Trump to now saying, I think that's going to be the case, but to where I'm just putting the caveat of I'm not going to swear to anything in blood on this kind of a year because we've had so many things that have gone against precedent so far. But this is one of these things, too.
You
because,
and me both, my friend. You and me both.
Well, yeah, and Trump, she by that point, you know, if you're hugging Obama, you are handing Donald Trump the mantle of change. He's a lunatic. He's all these things, but he's the change candidate at a time when people are pissed off and you're not. So it's a thing where I'm questioning a few things about her direction because these commercials I'm seeing, I'm convinced that she's just, you know, burning her money with some of these ones. The ones with the little kids, you know, they're playing the Trump clips.
Oh, I don't
there.
See them. I live
I'm
in DC.
Hillary Clinton. Did you know Donald Trump was a scumbag? You talk about wasting your money, right? That's baked in the cake, brother. That's baked in the cake. Anybody that's still for Trump doesn't care about that stuff.
So I look at it, and I think they're running this insular, safe kind of campaign, and I think it's going to cost them, not necessarily the race, but certainly the margin when it's over.
I would argue that you are not the audience. The audience has a different set of chromosomes. I'm not kidding. They talk about the white working class. Well, a little more than half of the white working class, especially with all the suicides and drug overdoses, is female. And a whole lot of them have been forced to knuckle under to some guy for a long time. And I have a feeling that, you know, the right kind of outreach, and I've been talking about this for a long time. I've been talking about this since Trump became real. Online advertising is perfect for this kind of thing. Targeted TV can be really effective if you're, you know, buying at the right times and places. But peeling off white working class women, because this guy's a creep, that may well work. We'll see.
I hear you on that. I hear you. But having seen a lot of the, you know, let's just say it, tough white broads that are for Trump, and I'm being blunt here, but the ones I've seen, right, they like that he's not politically correct. They if anything, it's a feature, not a bug, or at minimum, it doesn't cause them to go against him. That's kind of what I'm looking at here, is that because I think you always succeed when you paint the other guy as a legitimate danger. This is the flip side. In 2008, I was screaming about this on the show. Stupidest commercials I'd ever seen, as far as I was concerned. Republicans, Obama's trying to become the biggest celebrity in the world. I was screaming about that. I'm like, you have to talk about the damage that he's going to do, going to double the national debt. I guess I was kind of a little bit psychic in that regard, although I don't think you had to be the word great.
Thank Bush for
that. He doubled it, and then Obama doubled it after him. I don't know if you had to be the late, great Miss Cleo to know that Obama was going to do that. But
thank God interest rates are so low, because our economy is so strong that we can functionally borrow money for free. We actually are, if we did more deficit spending and built roads and bridges, we would be being paid by future investors to do that.
Let's just keep running the printing presses to Weimar Germany then, because that's basically what we've been doing the last 8 years.
You guys always bring that up. The United States is not Weimar Germany in 1922. It is the richest country in the world.
Hey, if Trump is Hitler, it's only because he's coming out of the Weimar Republic, right? But anyway,
you realize that the government could, if it sold one national park, the government could fund itself for a long time. I mean, we are a fantastically rich country.
Yeah.
I do see what you mean about the mantle of the change candidates and all of that. That is definitely a factor. You know, there's always the temptation. Well, look at the Bernie people. There's always a temptation to judge your average Bernie supporter by the loudmouths, right? And the same way with the true believer Trump fans are never going to change, right? But what you're trying to peel off is the person that they work with, you know, their sister, their cousin, someone who isn't as committed. But if all they hear are the loudmouths, then they're not getting any counter messaging. So, yeah, of course, you're never going to get the hardcore. What you're trying to do is either peel off a few or at least plant enough doubts that maybe they don't vote, right? So, everything's won on the margins, right? If you can get –
Yeah, true.
But
it's
and
a
my God, they're going to have
here.
More money. They're going to have a lot of money.
I don't see anybody Sure. I don't see anybody who feels strongly one way or another sitting home in November, regardless of what happens between now and then. But we'll have to see how that plays out. But before we get to predictions here, and this is certainly not the last time I want to talk to you during the final 100 days, the stuff going on after the convention, people looking at this again, Hillary, it's hard to separate out Hillary getting her convention bounce with the other stuff here, Trump's self-inflicted things here, Trump v. the Gold Star family, Trump now today as we're taping this, appearing to threaten McCain, Paul Ryan, and Kelly Ayotte. this is one of these things, again, I'll argue that a lot of this stuff is kind of like baked into the cake with him. And I've actually seen instances the last couple of days of people who were never Trump on Facebook who were almost starting to feel sorry for him. You know, the media with the whole thing about the Gold Star families, I think he's an idiot for handling it the way he did. But they totally delegitimized the Benghazi mom getting up at the Republican National Convention. How dare she politicize stuff? Yeah. So I look at this and I go, it's going to take a bite out of Trump, but I'm getting the sense not as much as people think. Because he's been through so many of these things and survived it so long. And as a Rand Paul voter, I wanted a lot of these things to take him down, and they never did. Now, I know it's a general election. But shouldn't we be suspending our judgment a little bit at this point about, OMG, that's going to be fatal to Donald Trump?
Oh, for sure about that. Anyone who predicts that something is going to take Trump down, you know, go away. You just don't know. But I will say, you know, the things that he just showed how callous and insensitive a person he is, right? That, you know, these are parents who lost a child serving this country. I have not lost a sibling. I have not lost a cousin. I've been very I've lost friends, but I've been very lucky.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot imagine what that pain is like. And I think any mother who sees this is going to think, again, we're dudes, you know, we think differently. But
right.
You attack a grieving mother, and you are a rotten human being.
True.
And now,
will
it matter? Who knows? Right. Who knows?
And that's narrowly what I'm arguing is that it might not, because I've already seen a lot of the Trump lumpkins on Facebook the last couple of days running around like, this guy's politicizing it. He's throwing in with the Democrats. Just another Arab guy denouncing Trump. So that's the whole thing here, too, is that I think Trump has been successful at rallying the people who believe in him to provide a counter-narrative, again, as stupid as I think it is, because, again, it's ill-advised, first of all, and second of all, again, this kid died for our country. Don't go after his parents. Say something respectful and then shut the F up. But, you know, he's not able to do that.
The country while protecting his men, you know?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, got a bronze.
Instead of talking about how much you sacrificed. Sure.
Yeah. No, and again, Dearborn, Michigan, very heavily Arab part of the country.
Yeah.
Michigan, you know, under Bush, you know, Bush was very careful, you know, after 9/11, not to blame Islam and Arabs in general. And Arab Americans, you know, did not turn against the Republicans in, you know, in huge numbers. Latinos, Bush was there are exit polls that I think exit polls are squirrely in general just because of samples and all that. There are exit polls that I think overstated his performance among Latinos in like 2004. But that notwithstanding, he did very well among Latinos. All over this country, there are people of, you know, Mexican or Central American descent who have been living here sometimes for decades with green cards as legal residents, who just never, you know, decided to become a citizen. Hundreds of thousands are becoming citizens now specifically to vote against Trump.
Exactly. And if I was Trump, I'd shut down his Michigan office right now just based on Dearborn, Michigan alone. Pull your resources, write it off. You lost that one with your mouth. In our scant time remaining, predictions, although, like I said, I do want to revisit with you before the election if possible, but I'm saying I lean towards Clinton winning and probably about the margin that Obama got last time. Additionally, I'm going to attack on a thing here, and feel free to make a prediction on this as well. If it goes to if Gary Johnson plucks off Utah or something else and it goes to the House, here's what I predict. The Republicans put the shiv in Trump by going to a intentional deadlock, and the Senate will vote for Pence. And Pence, as vice president with no president, would take the oath of office January 20th. So those are my two predictions. How do you see it?
Wow. Sounds like a good novel for sure, man, or a film. Yeah. A cult classic. I you know, the odds of anything ever going to the House are pretty trivial. I think the Electoral College map, the margin in the popular vote could well be a lot tighter than someone who has faith in America would like, right? I think my kind of feeling is either Hillary blows him away or it's super tight. I just don't think there's much in the middle. And I think she pulls it off. I think the margin in the Electoral College is a lot larger. Trump's going to run up his margins in places like Wyoming, Montana, Oklahoma, that don't matter functionally. You know,
Could be a
Democrat running up the margin in California.
Matchup of the candidates with the biggest negatives ever. Seemingly only the other one could lose to the other one. We'll see how it plays out, and hopefully again before Election Day. Colin Delaney of ePolitics, my good friend, thank you so much for being a part of this breakdown, my man. You brought it as always.
Always a pleasure, sir. I'll talk with you any day of the week.
Thank you so much.
Oh, look, they put it in the local paper.
Really?
Tom and Mary Wainthorpe are proud to announce the engagement of their daughter, Carrie, to Gareth Shadwell.
Oh.
5-door hatchback for sale. One previous owner, 46,000 miles, full service history, 3 months MOT.
Like getting your money's worth? Try our mayo chicken, made using only tasty chicken breast meat. Just 99p from the McDonald's Saver menu. From 10:30 a.m., price and participation may vary.